The diagnosis of deep vein thrombosis, or DVT, has long been regarded as a serious challenge in clinical practice. DVT occurs when a blood clot, or thrombus, forms within a vein in one of the legs. This typically leads to a red, warm, swollen, and painful leg. When this occurs in a person, concern then arises because these clots can potentially break off and get stuck in a major artery in the lungs, leading to pulmonary embolism. And this can be fatal. As a result, DVT needs to be recognized and treated with anticoagulants to prevent such a complication. The generally accepted test, the reference test, to diagnose or exclude DVT is compression ultrasonography. However, this kind of testing is expensive and requires referral to a hospital. Referral of all patients suspected of DVT isn't very efficient. We know that currently only a small proportion of patients referred for compression ultrasonography actually do have DVT. A diagnostic strategy, such as one based on signs, symptoms, and other readily available tests, might be helpful to identify those patients suspected of DVT with a high probability of DVT. These patients could then be referred for ultrasonography. It might also help to identify those patients with a low probability of DVT. And in those patients, DVT can be excluded and a referral for ultrasonography isn't needed. One such diagnostic strategy, based on a patient's medical history, symptoms and signs, and on levels of D-dimer, a blood test, was developed in the hospital setting some years ago. This strategy is called the Wells rule, and it's been applied widely in hospitals around the world. However, since most patients with suspected DVT are managed in primary care, the performance of Wells rule has been questioned in this setting, and evidence was found that the rule didn't perform well in primary care. Too many patients with a low risk of DVT, according to the Wells rule, did in fact have DVT. Consequently, primary care researchers set out to develop a new rule to be applied in that specific setting. So, how can this problem be studied in a diagnostic research setting? What are we actually aiming to study? And what kind of evidence do we need to produce to actually solve the clinical problem? We can start by defining our research question. We want to know what the best combination of tests is to assess the probability of having DVT in patients suspected of DVT in primary care. The aim is then to develop a rule to decide which patient should be referred for compression ultrasonography to diagnose or rule out DVT. Before we start thinking about how we'll conduct our study, we need to define exactly what kind of information we want to collect. The domain of our research should be patients who are suspected of having DVT. As we're interested in developing a tool to help primary care practitioners, our research should also focus solely on patients in a primary care setting. And which tests should we perform in our study? Evidence from previous studies has suggested that several patient characteristics are important, such as recent surgery or the presence of cancer, as well as the results from physical examination, such as swelling or redness of the leg. We'll also need to apply any other tests we aim to include, such as a point-of-care D-dimer test, to all of the patients in our study. Finally, an essential consideration is the method that will be used to determine the presence of DVT in our study. Compression ultrasonography seems like a natural choice, as it's an effective diagnostic tool. But this requires all patients to be referred, and this may be a challenge in a study that includes hundreds of patients. Moreover, compression ultrasonography isn't an ideal reference standard since some DVTs may be missed. For that purpose, we can also follow the patients for a specific period of time, say 3 months, to see whether they develop DVT or pulmonary embolism. Any cases of DVT or pulmonary embolism are then considered to already have had a DVT at the time they visited the primary care practice. Such a 3-month period is often used in such diagnostic DVT studies to identify the remaining patients in whom the diagnosis was present, in addition to those detected during compression ultrasonography. Now we need to decide on the best way to recruit patients and collect information on all diagnostic determinants and the outcome. Generally speaking, a cross-sectional design for data collection is the most appropriate design for diagnostic research. This would certainly be a reasonable approach if we decide to determine the presence of DVT by performing ultrasonography in all of the patients. A complication, however, arises when we consider the accuracy of our reference standard. As mentioned, compression ultrasonography doesn't guarantee a conclusive result. For this reason, we may decide to follow patients for a 3-month period to detect additional diagnosis of DVT or pulmonary embolism. Despite this follow-up period, our design can still be considered in some ways to be cross-sectional by nature, as this follow-up information is applied to assess whether the diagnosis was present at the time of the primary care consultation. A final important note about the study design relates to the recruitment period. As with the cow milk allergy example we discussed previously, we'll need to conduct our study over a long period of time in order to recruit enough patients. It may even take several years to collect enough information so that we can draw reliable conclusions. So now let's assume that we've conducted our study and we have a database with information about the predictors and outcome for all of our patients. We need to convert this information into a useful tool for future primary care practitioners. First, we should select a set of candidate predictors that are likely to be useful in diagnosing DVT. The new point of care D-dimer test should certainly be considered, as well as factors that are known to be related to DVT risk, such as age, sex, and clinical features, such as swelling of the leg. We may also consider other factors, such as comorbidities and the use of medications, such as oral contraceptives. We can then include these factors in a logistic regression model and fit the model to our patient data. The result we obtain is a mathematical tool consisting of a set of values corresponding to each of the diagnostic factors in our model. Ultimately, we need to distribute this tool in a form that's easy to use for clinicians. While some existing rules are based on simplified models, so probabilities can be calculated by hand, we could decide to create an online calculator or app. We may also want to designate cutoff values or thresholds so that patients with a very high probability are referred for ultrasonography to confirm a diagnosis of DVT. Patients with a moderate probability receive further testing, while patients with a very low probability can have DVT ruled out. Research very similar to this has actually already been conducted, and several clinical decision rules for DVT have been developed. But once again, the development of a diagnostic score is not the end of the story. As we've seen in the field of DVT research, it takes many years to test the performance and clinical utility of new rules. Additional studies have been performed in recent years, and a rule to guide diagnostic assessment in patients suspected of DVT in primary care has been included in current clinical guidelines. and is widely applied in daily practice.